So talk to me about how you've earned the nickname Bucket.
Well, so, and Bucket is actually shortened.
Oh, okay.
From Buckethead. So, this goes all the way back to middle school.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So I made the football team, and they didn't have a helmet that would fit me. So they had to order me one. So it came in like a week later, and it was white. And everybody on the team was black. So the coach says, we're practicing, and he goes, hey, you. He goes, Buckethead, get in here. Because of the white helmet. And so that stuck. Yeah. And then for years, when I was in Nashville, nobody knew that I was Buckethead. So I thought, well, this is good.
You're like, I've escaped.
I'm escaping.
Outgrew the nickname.
So then I had three of my buddies from Logan County come over. And we played golf.
Uh-huh.
And they were Buckethead this and Buckethead that. And I'm like,
uh-oh.
Somebody's probably heard it. Maybe not. So then the next day I'm playing golf, and I hear from like two fairways over, hey, Buckethead! So
it resurfaced.
Yeah, it resurfaced. And everybody started calling me that. And then we shortened it to Bucket. So
hilarious. Yeah. That's a great story.
Yeah, that's a great story. So anyway, but that goes all the way back to middle school.
That's awesome. Yeah.
That's
awesome.
Definitely the promo clip.
Buckethead.
Especially, hey, Buckethead. Like,
yeah.
That's,
yeah, we're going to use that as a promo for this episode. For sure.
Feeny, your sneezing just got outdone.
I'm so glad.
I think there might be room for both.
So we had started, so you have a belt of town signs in Nantucket. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about Nantucket.
So that is related to my daughter.
Okay.
And she happens to be in healthcare, but when she was in college, she had this idea that she was going to go to Martha's Vineyard and work a summer to pay for Europe because she wanted to backpack through Europe.
Why Martha's Vineyard specifically?
I don't have a clue.
Okay.
So she went up there with a bunch of her friends. They were all high school buddies, and she worked at this inn. She made like $4,000 over the summer.
Good for her.
And it was all tips.
Mm-hmm.
So she used that money to go to Europe.
That's
awesome. Yeah, she was at Wake Forest, did a work study program with Boston College after that.
Okay.
And went back to Europe, went back to England. And, so that was the story around that.
Like
so,
she lived in England for a little while?
Yeah, she lived in London.
That's awesome.
Wow. Yeah.
What did she do there?
So she was in a work study program with Boston College.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay. That's what sent her back. Okay.
Yeah. So the way the belt came about is because she had the tie to, that area, she rented a house up there for a number of years, and we went up there as a family.
Nice.
And so that's how I got the belt.
Okay. So you have been a lifelong entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to us about how you got started in that space, and let's take it from there.
Sure. So I got started, first of all, I'm older than dirt, right?
I doubt it, but go
all
on.
All right. So anyway, but I got started mostly in the orthopedic space.
Okay.
With a company called DePuy Synthes. And they're owned by Johnson & Johnson today.
I hope you won't ask me to spell that.
Yeah, it's, Synthes was a big competitor of ours, and then they merged with them. But so I was with them for 11 years. I was a distributor for them. So I had responsibility of Tennessee and Alabama and the Panhandle of Florida.
Okay.
Had a bunch of team members that were part of that company. And it exposed me to a lot of orthopedic surgeons, doing hips and knees and shoulders and elbows. And we did ankles and we didn't do spine at that time. But I saw, how hospital systems preyed on their time. And between cases, there was nothing for it to be an hour, hour and a half wait for the next case. And so I did that for 11 years, started a company called OrthoLink Physicians Corporation in 96. And that came about because of an orthopedic surgeon contact that I had. when I was with DePew. And he approached me one day and he said, you know, we touch a lot of things that we don't own. And I was like, can you give me the list? Mm-hmm. And he was Ambulatory Surgery Center was at the top of the list. Imaging led by, you know, MRI, physical therapy, you know, durable medical equipment, real estate partnerships, all those things. Mm-hmm. And so he said to me, he goes, I'm busy being a doctor. You know, so I see patients all day or I'm in surgery all day or both. And then I go home and I just don't have any time to create a business plan. Mm-hmm. So I told him, I said, let me take a stab at that. Okay. And so I did. And that became OrthoLink Physicians Corporation. And it was really one of the first generations physician practice management companies in orthopedics in the United States. We had 225 orthopedic surgeon partners. We were in 6 states, and we had 11 what we called musculoskeletal institutes, which encased really all of those ancillaries that I just mentioned a few minutes ago. And so we built a revenue stream, a cash flow stream that existed beyond the professional fee stream. And that was a very successful company. We had, you know, the 225, we learned a lot. I didn't know anything about building an ambulatory surgery center at that time. Didn't know anything about really doctors other than...
Yeah. I was going to say, where did you start on your business plan? Like, what did that research process look like?
The research process was really getting other business plans.
Okay.
And there were some other companies that were out there in oncology, you know, multi-specialty areas, but not in orthopedics. And so I just, you know, looked at their plan. And a lot of those companies were public at the time. And that was the genesis of it. And okay. So I created that plan. We started that company. It was a great run. We did it for 5 years. We sold it to United Surgical Partners International in 2001. And the combined companies of USPI and us went public later that year. I left along with a partner, Kathy Kowalski, who is a RN. She's an operator and she's still with me today. And we're partners in the business that we're currently in. But in 97, we acquired a company that she was the principal in. And so Kathy and I started working together, and we've worked together ever since that time.
Oh, wow.
So we started, I had an opportunity, she had an opportunity to go with USPI. And they were based in Dallas, Texas. And I floated it to my wife, and she was like, you're going to have a good time in Dallas.
How old are your kids at this point?
The kids were probably... anywhere from middle school to, you know, elementary school.
Oh, yeah. So total uproot.
Total uproot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I said, well, you know, we're going to create a hospital company. And she says, well, what do you know about hospitals? And I said, nothing.
That's so impressive, by the way. Like, that's terrifying, but yes.
Yeah. So we created a hospital company, and it was called Surgical Alliance Corporation. And it involved physician ownership in hospitals.
Okay.
And
was that unusual at that time?
It had existed for a number of years, but we wanted to take it to another level.
Awesome.
And in that, we wanted to move outside of a rural setting into a, you know, a setting like a Nashville, you know, a mid-market setting. Mm-hmm. And we did that. And we did that on the relationships that we had, that Kathy had, in the Columbus, Ohio market. And so we created New Albany Surgical Hospital, which was 40 beds, had 8 operating rooms, and about 100,000 square feet. And so the business plan was good, except we didn't realize that the federal government would look at it as hard as they did. And so they outlawed physician ownership in hospitals. They created a moratorium about the time we opened that asset.
Oh, wow.
And then there was actually a prohibition against physician ownership with the Obamacare in 2008. So we opened that in 2003, and it took off like a rocket. And we sold it to our physician partners after the federal government weighed in. And And we started another company called Meridian Surgical Partners, which was a ambulatory surgery center company. We ran that for 13 years. Okay. And we had 17 centers around the United States.
Okay.
12 of those were through acquisition. 5 of those were, you know, we built from the ground up.
Uh-huh.
And we kind of thought we were done. We had a 2-year non-compete, and Kathy went and did something else, and I went and did something else, and then we had the pandemic hit in the course of that, and that kind of altered everything. And so Link Health Partners is kind of, I called her one day, she was doing something else, and she goes, "What do you want?" And I said, "I have an idea." And so we got together, and she said no about 3 times. And that was, the more I got her into cocktails, the less no, the less emphatic no was. And so I said, "What if we did something really boutique-ish in ambulatory surgery center space?" And she goes, "What are you talking about?" And I said, "Well, the pandemic, you know, total joint replacement is now being done in an outpatient setting, and it was not possible, deemed possible by the physicians before the pandemic."
Oh, wow. That changed just into like 2020.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so spine was the same way. And then heart, interesting enough, 30% of those procedures that are done are released within 3 hours of their hospital stay. You would not think that.
For heart?
For heart. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'd be almost scared to leave after 3 hours. I'd be like, "Am I okay to leave?"
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is, you know, diagnostic related testing and things like changing out pacemakers mm-hmm. and leads for pacemakers and things mm-hmm. of that nature.
Not like, you know, valve replacements.
No, not like valve replacements. Yeah. You would need to be on a hospital campus to do that. Yeah. So, but my idea was, look, if we did nothing but that, those surgeons are all embedded in the hospitals. Mm-hmm. And they, as they come out, you know, we would be a logical choice for them. And so we started Link Health Partners about 3 years ago. And we've been really boutique-ish. We bought a center over in the St. Louis market.
Okay. What made you choose the St. Louis market?
We needed about a certain level of cash flow to be able to finance that deal. And I called a broker buddy of mine in New York, investment banker, and I said, "What do you got in the country?" And he said, "I have something in St. Louis." Well, Kathy and I had had a previous business in Meridian Surgical Partners. We had been in St. Louis for 10 years.
Oh, okay.
So we were very familiar with that mm-hmm. market, the payer setting, you know, and we knew of these doctors. And naively, we thought that we would close this asset in about 90 days. 7 months later, we got it done.
Wow.
So it was It was interesting, but that's what has got us into business today. So there's been a long line of working with doctors and developing centers, and
so you've done a mix of buying
already and
developing, functioning and setting up de novos. Which is your favorite?
Well, the best value creation is in the de novo.
Sure,
you're putting in a dollar and you're taking out whatever you sell it for. Normally 10 or 11 bucks versus buying an asset that you're paying a multiple off of the cash flow. Mm-hmm. And then you have to improve it. And I will say this, that what I have seen in the last probably, well, since the pandemic, is these we call them higher acuity, but they're really more complex cases mm-hmm. that are getting done in an ambulatory surgery center, like total joint replacement. The level of revenue and the cash the business will generate is at a completely different level, very, very much improved.
And ortho, to my understanding, is one of the higher cash generating specialties.
Yes.
Is that?
That's correct. And what we're doing in St. Louis, there's different types of reimbursement, all the way from, you know, the federal government and, you know, commercial and payers, workers' comp, you know, claims that are more employer-based, mm-hmm. which trade at a much higher level. This happened to be a workers' comp, you know, business that we bought into.
Okay.
But we bought into it knowing that, you know, our revenue and our cash flow was going to be there in the future because we were going to add a a total joint program. We're going to add a spine program. You know, they had a bunch of commercial cases that they were doing that we knew that we could get. So we had calculated into that acquisition a series of maneuvers that was going to build revenue and cash flow.
Is Missouri a certificate of need state?
It's not.
Okay.
Not for surgery centers. It is for hospitals.
Okay. So you didn't have that sort of extra regulatory hurdle to jump through, but you just kind of needed the foundation to build upon.
Correct. And interesting enough, we've not moved beyond St. Louis. We've been really picky.
Okay.
And, you know, we have a couple of other markets, two or three markets that we're interested in, that we have advanced the ball quite a bit. But we don't have a deal yet.
And you even expanded in Missouri after that initial ambulatory surgery center.
We did, and you did do your homework, didn't you?
I credit officer. I was part of getting these loans approved, you know?
So one of the things that Kathy did as my partner for 2 years, she worked with another friend of ours that was on our board at Meridian Surgical Partners. And it was a non-operative musculoskeletal business, in that a patient could go into it and an operation was not the first thought, you know. Okay. So you're trying to do physical therapy, uh-huh. You know, you're doing x-rays, you're doing regenerative medicine, you're doing whatever to keep that patient from, you know, needing surgery. And she started with 5 locations, built it out to 14. What she found is the soccer mom would have an issue with a child, right? And they may be 75 miles from a, you know, primary location. They didn't want to go to the primary location. They wanted to get that issue taken care of right there, right? And so it would start with a soccer mom having a good experience. She'd tell her husband, they'd tell their parents, they'd tell their grandparents. So there's a certain element of the business as you would go up the ladder that required surgery. And so each one of those locations that she built, you know, 250 surgeries annually would come out of that.
Oh, wow.
So what we're doing in St. Louis is trying to combine that company with our company, which is in the surgery center business. And from the perspective of, if we could take those cases and then put them on top of our surgery center, mm-hmm. not to underwrite, you know, a deal, but to enhance a deal, mm-hmm. that we knew that there was a significant opportunity for us in terms of, you know, the revenue and the cash the business would generate, and we would be known as driving business to it, to our physician partners, mm-hmm. and
which is appealing for them,
which is very appealing to them. And you know, there's some regulatory hurdles. We can't just tell you that you're going to have surgery at
sure.
our center.
Right.
We have to give you choice.
Yep.
And, you know, have to give you a list of maybe 10 different, you know, locations that mm-hmm. you could have
referrals
surgery.
And, yeah.
Right. And you pick.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, it you know, you'll pick a hospital. Sometimes you'll pick a competitor. But most times you'll pick one of our guys. You'll go, do you know this guy? You know, where did they train? Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Yep, we know him. It's part of our network. You know, we're in control of that. Blah, blah, blah. And we get probably 75% of that business.
And is there a cost benefit to the patient by not going to a hospital in terms of?
Yeah. So the industry trades at about 50 cents on a dollar cheaper. So the idea behind our model was, is if you entered in a non-operative, you know, a point of entry, and you needed surgery, then you could get the surgery in a setting that was 50% cheaper than the hospital would be. Mm. And they're ambulatory surgery centers, I mean, they're relatively new, and that the first one was started in 1970.
Oh, wow.
And there's roughly, let's see how many there are today, 12,000.
Yeah.
Roughly, of which about 7,000 of those are Medicare certified. Mm. Meaning that the federal government has certified them, they will pay mm-hmm. to have an operation there. You know, they have a list of different procedures that they will approve and pay for. And that list is expanding to some of these more complex cases like total joints, shoulders, mm-hmm. knees, hips, you know, things mm-hmm. like that, ankles.
And cue the head, shoulders, knees, and toes song.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
I'm not the only one that heard it.
With Nashville being the healthcare capital of the country, you know, what kind of do you guys have business in Nashville as well? I know you mentioned St. Louis, but
we don't. But there are a number of large companies that are here, and it was really born out of HCA. And HCA probably has today 150 surgery centers, mostly in their markets where they have hospitals. AmSurge is a big player, but mostly in gastroenterology and ophthalmology. So,
and they're headquartered in Nashville.
They're
too,
headquartered here, and but they've got 250 centers. Surgery Partners, which was a roll-up of several different companies around the country. They've got 180 centers. Bain Capital is in their structure.
And they're headquartered in Brentwood.
They're headquartered in Brentwood, yep. You know, I think those are the big ones, and then there's two or three smaller ones that are here. So, you know, and we've done business with all of them. We've bought and sold centers over the years from all of them. And I think what you're going to see is, and what we have seen in the last few years, is a fair amount of consolidation in that space. You know, the ambulatory surgery center is a setting that physicians love it, patients love it, and there's an economic opportunity for the physicians that doesn't exist elsewhere. And so 95% of the ambulatory surgery centers, whether they're Medicare certified or not, have physician ownership. So physicians have ownership and in the model. And we are a company that, you know, we're the real, sort of the business partner to the clinical side. And there's all kinds of businesses, you know, everything from gastroenterology to ophthalmology to orthopedics, spine, I mean, you know, the heart now. I mean, there's a lot of different areas that, you know, patients are choosing. And what you're seeing is the payers are demanding that the patient goes to, you know, the lower cost setting.
Sure.
Which makes a lot of sense, right?
Aside from, you know, the regulatory issues, what was one of the biggest hurdles when starting out in this field?
Regulatory is a big one. I mean, these things are they have a lot of traps and they have a lot of pitfalls, and you need a good attorney to keep you out of trouble, and it's ever changing, and you know, but I would say finding the right opportunity and the right growth opportunity was the biggest hurdle from an acquisition perspective. And similarly, from a de novo perspective, you got to find the right opportunity. We don't do anything speculatively. You know, it's there's no speculative business. And so everything starts with, you know, what a physician is doing and their codes, and we discount that pretty heavily. But we know going into a deal what our cost is going to be, what the revenue is going to be, what the, you know, cash the business will generate. We can pretty much hit it.
And when you say what the physician is doing with their codes, do you mean the medical billing side in terms of how they're coding the acuity and severity of?
Correct.
Okay.
And, you know, most physicians will tell you, for instance, if they tell you, I'm doing 200 cases, we're going to cut that immediately in half. 100 and then we're gonna look at, you know, by subsector of codes what that will generate in that market, right? And we know from a payer profile perspective what we can expect, and we can pretty much predict the cash the business is going to generate. And if we don't have if there's not the right mix of opportunity, and if it's not profitable, we're just not going to do it.
Do you place a greater emphasis in that regard on the market itself or on the physicians that you're...
Physicians.
Okay.
Always the physicians.
Okay.
You know, this is not retail healthcare. This is very scientific in terms of how you do it. And there's a big difference between, you know, just going out and finding a location and a site and building something as to doing this. I mean, mm-hmm. these are points of destination that a patient will travel to.
Yep.
And we found that for surgery, they'll travel at least 2 hours.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They won't today for physical therapy or imaging.
Sure.
I mean, they'll travel much less distances.
Yeah. Yeah. And physical therapy is such a, you usually do that a couple times a week. So traveling 2 hours back
you're
and
not
forth
do
is,
that.
Yeah. Whereas at something where someone is literally like rebuilding your hip joint, you know, that might be worth the drive for
might be worth the drive.
A high quality provider.
Might be worth the drive.
As long as someone else can drive.
I've had friends fly across the country for, you know, surgeries because they found a surgeon that they love. But, you know, I had physical therapy in May and I found a place that was 3 doors down from our office because, you
there
know,
you go.
I'm there twice a week. So.
Yeah,
you're going to do something very convenient. And we've seen a lot of changes in this market, and a lot of the big healthcare systems, and they're consolidating like crazy. So hospitals buying mm-hmm. other hospitals. Mm-hmm. And we've seen some really big systems that are wanting to develop an ambulatory surgery center business. And the reason they're doing that is because the payers are telling them, we're not gonna pay for it in the hospital. Mm-hmm. You know, and so the game changes in terms of how they think about mm-hmm. what they have to offer. Now, if you think about it from a P&L perspective, it can make all the sense in the world to move a bunch of total joints or spine or whatever, these high acuity businesses out. But whoever's got P&L responsibility, they're going to look at that and they're going to go, you know, I'm not taking this hit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not on my budget. I'm not taking this hit. So there, it has to be bought in at the top, I guess, is my point, is you're not going to, even at the CFO level, certainly at the business development level, you're not going to be successful. You've got to have buy-in all the way up to the top, mm-hmm. all the way to the board level.
And I think the kind of going back to the model where the physicians have ownership, considering that they are the first piece of the puzzle and the most important piece, them having ownership is also a non-compete in and of itself in a way in terms of keeping them engaged and active and revenue generating.
I'll tell you this. There are some industries out there, like the one that I was in, uh-huh. you know, they had the best of all worlds in that I'm selling you, you're paying for it, so you don't really care.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, all of a sudden, I'm selling you and you're an owner. You care.
Yeah.
So the fact that I'm going to take you hunting or play golf with you or whatever, you're like, hey, Hancock, you got to lower the price, man. Because that's money out of their pocket.
Yeah.
Right? So what we're seeing is, you know, a shift in a transition in how different industries are reacting to that to maintain average selling price. Mm-hmm. Right? In our industry, the one that I was in previously, DePuy Synthes, all of the companies, and there's four or five of them, and they control the market worldwide, all have designed ambulatory surgery center programs to be able to assist their customers in doing it correctly. Mm. They're not in it for the same reasons we're in it. They're not in it to be a partner, and the economics are not there. But what they're trying to do is they're trying to move up the ladder a bit from a vendor relationship mm-hmm. or a manufacturer relationship to a partner relationship.
Interesting.
So you said something earlier that was interesting to me, and I want to jump back to it. You said you started an ambulatory service center not knowing anything about it.
Right.
Why the healthcare space? Why did you, you know, as a serial entrepreneur, why the healthcare space?
Well, I got involved in it because of a really good friend that I grew up with. And he played in a golf tournament every year. And I was very entrenched in what I was doing. And he asked my wife, he said, would he leave? Maybe. Maybe for the right money, the right opportunity.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so I did. And we packed up from Southern Kentucky. And my wife and I grew up there. And I was entrenched in a family business that I'd grown up in.
Oh, okay. What was that?
It was in, we were like a general store. So we had hardware and furniture and toys and gifts and everything but, you know, dry goods.
Okay.
And I grew up in a business like that.
Okay.
And so after college, I went back into that business. So I was almost a retail guy.
Wow.
Were your parents entrepreneurs? Or?
Yeah.
So it's kind of been a generational thing?
Yeah.
This is something you have seen throughout childhood as normal.
Yeah.
So it's hard to...
It's hard to see.
Hard to get away from.
Once you're sucked in, you're stuck for
hard
life.
To get away from. Yeah. It. Yeah. So I don't think I have ever done something that I wasn't an owner in. Just haven't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think I would not do well.
Definitely would be an adjustment. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how is your parents' business doing? Do you have a sibling that took that over?
No, that business was, we were in a rural setting.
Uh-huh.
So there were like 7,000 people there.
Oh, wow.
And the county was like, I don't know, 35,000, something like that. And today it's about the same.
Oh, right? Wow.
And so we... I got in this in the orthopedic business through a friend of mine. I got my brother involved in that, and so my brother and I both went back into that business. My father had gone into the business. My grandfather started the business.
Oh wow! What year?
1940-ish.
Wow. Okay, cool. We're talking like World War II times.
Yeah,
that's insane.
Yeah, and he was a victim. You know, I mean, he grew up through the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they look through a different lens, right?
And this is pre-Walmart.
Pre-Walmart, but you bring that up. And so I would say that when I left, and then I called my brother, and I said, there's an opportunity down here in Charlotte, and you need to come down here and look at it. And he did. And he left. So I left my father, and my grandfather by that time was out of the business. And so... Dad had a choice, either to sell the business or to liquidate the business. Mm-hmm. And he chose to liquidate the business, and he did. And that was on the heels of Walmart coming in to that community.
Wow.
So Walmart changed the whole landscape of rural America, really.
Yeah.
But
how was that experience for him? Was he heartbroken?
Probably, but I didn't know it.
Oh.
Didn't know it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember the day that that my wife and I, and we had a dog, and we had two kids, and we had everything that we owned in a Ryder truck. And we were leaving, this was in Russellville, Kentucky. We were leaving that little small community, and we were going down to Greensboro, North Carolina, which we knew nothing about.
Just packed up and left.
Just packed up and left.
I love it.
That's brave. Especially with
risk.
Two kids. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So are there any lessons from kind of what you saw with your family's business that you've been able to apply to your time as an entrepreneur?
Yeah, a lot. I started working in that business probably when I was 8 years old. And I say working, you know, you were sweeping floors.
Sure.
And, you know.
That was your chores.
Changing out Coke machines and
stuff
like that. And then when we got old enough, probably, I don't know, 12 or 13, to unload trucks, you would be on the lookout, to listen for air brakes. Because you knew that was a problem.
Yeah.
You were going to be tied up for the next couple of hours doing all that. And so we got to know the truck drivers and all that. But I think I would have been in the retail business. It's hard when you're another generation entering a business. Hmm. And at the time I entered it, computers were just getting started,
mm-hmm.
right? That made all the sense in the world to me. Point of sale terminals and being mm-hmm. able to understand movement of inventory and, you know, reordering what was moving and blah, blah, blah. That made a lot of sense to me. We were in an old building which had huge ceilings, and one of the things that also I thought of was let's take the merchandise up.
Yeah.
Right, we don't pay anything for that space; it's just there. Well, my grandfather, being a product of the Depression, they immediately said, "Now we're going to get, people will steal from us." And I go, "Well, they make security cameras for that." Yeah, but they cost too much money. So there was always
he
wanted to be able to see people.
Okay. Wow.
So now every time I go into a Lowe's or, you know, or a Home Depot. And I see stuff stacked all the way to the ceiling.
That's the first thing you think of, yeah.
First thing I think of. But I learned a lot in that business. And, you know, my father, he had a code on everything that we sold. We sold a lot of furniture. And the code was don't give up. And so if you look at don't give up from, you know, 1 to 10, that's what it is. And so I would always know the cost of everything that I was trying to sell. So if somebody was negotiating with me, I had the cost right in front of me, but they didn't know that.
Interesting.
Yes.
That's good.
Very interesting. And but I think it gave me the, you know, you're not going to fail, you're going to make it, and it's going to be hard, and you know.
The work ethic is instilled from day one.
Day one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like the idea of achieving a goal and how that, what that looks like was already, you were already chasing that because you already saw it. Yeah.
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 I listened to a book. I don't read very many books. I listen to them. Thank God they have that now. That technology.
I listen to audiobooks all the time.
All the time. So I listened to a book
on
Walton. And it was a book that he did himself because he had cancer and he knew he was going to die, and his family pushed him to do this book. Well, the discount strategy that he came up with in rural America was just really by luck.
So
he was in the Ben Franklin business. So he was in the five and dime business. And he stumbled upon this discount concept in rural America. And in a lot of his competitors, like Kmart and others, didn't think there were enough people in the rural areas to support one. And he found that by providing all of those goods and really good service that yes, it would support one. And so he kind of backed into that strategy. And it's interesting to listen to this book because he became, you know, the richest man in the world. And he said, you know, I get all these people from Wall Street calling me and they want to come to Bentonville. And he said, you know, nothing's ever changed for me. I still go to the same barber. I still go to the same church. I see the same people. You know, he goes, it's all stock. I don't know it.
Very humble.
Very
and
humble.
And it's still the number one revenue grossing company in the country.
And the reason I think it is because early on, and he talks about this a lot, it was a function of his team members. He had the right people.
Well, speaking of, so you have your team, you and Kathy, you guys have kind of been in it from the beginning.
For about 30 years, yeah.
So I often think that shared experiences creates like a bond between teams that tends to generate results going forward. Talk about some of those shared experiences you guys had together in terms of ups and downs.
So she's my road wife. She keeps me straight. She's all the time, you know, picking on different things that on my shirt. She goes, you drop food on yourself again. I go, you're like my wife.
At least you know. At least you're not going to walk into a meeting with, you know, not knowing you have mustard on your shirt.
So our whole team and this glass company, we've probably been together 15 years. And it was just by luck that we were able to come together. So the CFO, who had been with us for 15 years, the technology head had been with us in the industry for 15 years. And we had to do a lot of recruiting to get him. But the other was just a function of timing. So we were able to get the core team together, and we had all been together for, you know, 15 years. And so the nice thing about that is you don't agree, and everybody has their division, their own responsibility. And we rarely agree. And we'll get in a room and we'll just fight like cats and dogs. But we'll come out of that, and it's typically a pretty good process in terms of the right decision. Mm-hmm. You know, and because nobody holds anything responsible. So Kathy's yelled at me a lot.
But it's about
to keep you in line.
You've been able to find like that common mission.
Yeah.
That you are all that you're moving towards, and each person has their responsibilities in that. And
yep. Yeah, and she's an operator par excellence. I mean, she's as good as there is. I mean, she's clinical, and she learned the business side along the way.
Okay.
And so she was taught, you know, P&L responsibilities and how to read that and you know, to keep track of you know, the indicators, the key indicators that are important in a business. Mm-hmm. And so she does her thing. She oftentimes says, well, you know, you're a developer by heart, and I am. And she goes, you know, I've got to run what you buy or what you do. So I've got a lot better over the years.
Yeah,
I think I have at least. anyway, but there's a lot of truth in that. Mm-hmm. And then the CFO, I mean, he never engages the customer. So all the thing he's seeing is black and white. Mm. So, you know, he's asking questions or, you know, saying no to a deal because he doesn't have any of the color, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
And the technology is important because technology is just important. Mm-hmm. Ties everything together and gives you good reporting structures. And one of the things that we learned early on is that you to run a good business, you have to run it real time. You can't run it in arrears, mm-hmm. you know, 30, 40 days. And that's what a lot of the IT platforms were. By then, I mean, you can't make a decision to change it.
Opportunities have already passed.
The opportunities have already passed.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're very focused on real-time data, dashboards that allow the staff and the doctors and anybody that wants to see it, mm-hmm. and certainly Kathy, to react to it.
Yeah.
Immediately, right? And I think it's invaluable.
Definitely.
It's really invaluable. And
who's your partner in that?
In our business currently
in the data side.
HST, which they're kind of big in the ambulatory surgery center space, and that was started by an individual that had been involved in the data leader before.
Okay.
And so he knew where the gaps were and what he needed to do and how he needed to do it.
Uh-huh.
And he sold really the entire industry on it. So all of those big players that I mentioned to you earlier,
mm-hmm. yep.
they're all using HST. Oh.
And so that's how you built out your dashboards mm-hmm. and that's how where that information feeds through. Okay. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yep.
So y'all bring something different to the table, mm-hmm. and that's definitely valuable.
Yeah.
Quite the team, yeah.
Each know, I'm guessing, what your strengths and weaknesses are.
Oh, yeah, we know. We know.
You may call them out uncomfortably at times.
And they call me out frequently.
Yeah.
They go, well, you don't know what you're talking about. Well, okay.
Communication's key.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But, I mean, it's a good process.
Yeah. Clearly, yeah. It's been successful for you so far.
It's a great process. And, you know, I will say this. In this company, you know, I'm the chief executive officer, but I really don't look at it that way. I look at it, you know, Kathy and I are partners. Mm-hmm. And we're a team. And she's president of the company. Our level of experience, I would put up against anybody's in the industry. You know, we're not as big. I have seen that happen over time. Had one good friend that, you know, was part of that. And, it just is the way it is. I mean, you know, most of my career I've been focused in my strength is business mm-hmm. development. And Kathy's been focused in operations. Jim's been focused in finance, you know, and, so and Chad in IT and that's a very healthy environment.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So anyway, we've seen a lot of changes in the industry.
So with the growth that you guys have already had and the changes that have been happening in the industry, what is your vision for the company moving forward?
if we stay engaged in this, I think there is an opportunity to remain a boutique type of enterprise. Mm-hmm. We don't want to be all things to all people. We don't want to be multi-specialty. We don't want to do gastroenterology or eyes. You know, our strength is really orthopedics. We understand that. I say neurosurgery as it relates only to spine, not as it relates to brain. And but the vision for the company would be to do what we're doing in St. Louis and to do it in other markets. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately, I think there would be a buyer for, you know, the business plan for the market strategy. Mm-hmm. And it'll get consolidated to somebody that, you know, can take it to 30 markets.
Are you able to share what some of your markets are, or is that kind of part of the secret sauce?
Well, I mean, right now we're just in St. Louis. You know, the other markets are speculative at this point.
Sure.
Because they're not baked. Hmm. You know, but we're close. We're close in two markets, and we've been in that state before, and it's a good state to operate in. And you know, one of the things that we found is when you get five or six physicians together, male, female, they'll migrate to somebody that they've heard of, right? Mm. They don't know who we are. They don't know who Link Health Partners is. Mm. You know, and so my point there is if we can get in front of them from a granular perspective, mm-hmm. one or two people before they've gotten together, they go, well, we get everything with you guys that we get with the big players, but we get a better deal with mm-hmm. you. We take a minority interest in all of our opportunities. We leave the majority with the physicians. Mm-hmm. We have a opportunity for them to monetize part of their holding when we exit, mm-hmm. which is very attractive to them. Mm-hmm. And we paper a deal on the front end that protects them on the, you know, on a sale. So things that are important are staffing, scheduling, equipment decisions. Those are really, really important to doctors. And we paper a deal where that requires requisite majority, meaning a majority interest of the doctors to agree to before you make any substantive changes to any of those areas.
Okay.
So it's a great business model.
Has that ever like kind of handcuffed you from making changes that you felt needed to be made, but you mm-hmm. couldn't get the majority? Okay.
No.
That's good.
No, and I will say this. We've had a number of acquisitions in previous companies where we acquired a majority. So we automatically have board control. We automatically have all of the control elements of decision-making, mm-hmm. right? And so the physicians are always asking us, how do you make decisions? And I always ask them, how do you make decisions? Well, we have a group of guys that get together, ladies, and we'll debate an issue, mm-hmm. and then we'll make a decision on it. We do the same thing. It's incumbent upon us to give you the data mm-hmm. to react to, but we're not going to make a decision that is typically juxtaposed to their decision because it's not the right decision. So that's what we found.
You have a lot of trust in your doctor. So hence why they are as important as we talked about earlier.
Yeah, I mean, it's doctors are interesting. They're really bright. Mm-hmm. They're very interesting. And they're not trained in business.
Yeah.
You know, they're trained in medicine. And so they react well to data. Mm-hmm. So you have to give them a lot of data and you have to give them a little bit of guidance,
okay.
and they'll make the right decisions.
Okay,
that's the way that works. So, I mean, they're data-driven animals.
Yeah, with a little bit of an ego.
With a lot.
I was trying to keep it, you know. Do we want to switch to the fun side?
I do. I was just thinking about you went to Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Are you a big football fan?
No, I'm always a big basketball fan because you can't come out of there if you're not a big basketball fan. And up until, I don't know, 5 years ago, we had something to crow about in basketball. Not anymore.
I think I've heard Ellis lament about that a couple times. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's probably talked about that a little bit.
Yeah.
Did you play sports growing up?
I did. I was a football player.
Okay.
And thank God I wasn't taller or faster, because I would have played on up the ladder and yeah. I wouldn't be able to walk today.
Do you follow football, the like maybe not Kentucky, but do you follow NFL or anything like that?
I follow a lot of football. Yeah, I follow the NFL. I mean, growing up, we didn't have the Titans.
Oh, yeah, they were in Houston.
Yeah. So, you know, Green Bay was a big team. Pittsburgh was a big team.
Go Pack.
Yeah. So, you know, I followed it from afar. Okay. You know? Yeah. And my old high school coach, he went to Florida State.
Okay.
And he was the only coach when Bobby Bowden came in that he retained. So he was clearly very good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I only had him for 1 year, but I could tell he was really dynamic. And he went to another school and he didn't win a game. And then he went to Florida and he won a couple of state championships and he was hired by Florida State. And then that regime was fired and Bobby Bowden came in and he kept him. He was the only guy he kept.
Oh, wow.
And he stayed his entire career.
At Florida State?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. We have a couple Florida State fans around here.
Yeah, they'll know him.
Yeah. I am coming from the Northeast. You don't really have any college football teams to write home about.
No,
so
it's not many.
It's NFL primarily, but for the last 5 years, it's been pretty pathetic. So
I won my first SEC game on Saturday. It's Kentucky versus the Tennessee Vols. So.
Well, there you go.
Very excited.
So we had a daughter that went to Auburn.
Okay.
And I never will forget this. So Auburn was playing Florida, and it was the year Florida won the national championship.
Wow.
And I think they beat Ohio State in the national championship. But anyway, we were there in the stadium, and Auburn blocked a punt, and the stadium literally shook. I mean, it shook.
Yeah.
And I told my wife, I said, this is real SEC football.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, because you don't get that at
it's
Kentucky.
It's palpable. Yeah.
I mean, you don't get that at Kentucky, right? So, anyway.
What was the best, like, live sporting event you've ever been to? Is there one that's, like, memorable, kind of similar to that? But
there are several that I remember. One story in particular. I go to a Super Bowl. This is right out of college.
Oh, wow. Very okay. Cool. Yeah.
So a buddy calls me and he goes, Hancock. He goes, I've got a ticket to Super Bowl. You want to go? And I go, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
His dad was director of player personnel for the Cleveland Browns.
Okay.
So that was the tie.
Uh-huh.
So I go down there, meet him in Dallas. That's where the Super Bowl was. And there's this little kid sitting, I don't know, two, three rows, you know, seats down from me. And I said, and these were pretty good seats because we got them through the Cleveland Browns.
And who were the Browns playing?
No, this was Dallas and Denver.
Oh, okay.
Were playing.
Okay.
In the Super Bowl.
And they were playing in Dallas?
And they were playing, well, no. They were playing in New Orleans.
Okay, gotcha.
New Orleans. And so I asked this kid, I said, how did you get that seat? Or what, something like that. Because, I mean, you know, he's like 10 years old.
Uh-huh.
He goes, my daddy's in cattle. I'll never forget
that's
that.
That's precious.
I'll never forget that. My daddy's in cattle. And I was like, okay.
You're like, cattle must like be that's pretty good. An explanation of itself. You're
cattle's
like,
doing well.
You're like, I still need more data.
I need more data points. But anyway. So that's probably one of the most memorable. And we did all the Kentucky basketball stuff. I mean, we would do the SEC championship.
Yeah, because they host that here pretty frequently, it feels like.
Pretty frequently. We moved from Minnesota. That's an interesting story. I had taken my wife, who's a Southern Belle, big-time Southern Belle, from North Carolina to Minnesota. To Minneapolis.
And that's an adjustment.
Didn't work out real well. So. It's probably the worst business decision I've ever made. Just so you know.
Now, because on the business side or the on personal? The domestic side?
On the domestic side.
Okay.
Business side was good. Domestic side was not good. So anyway, and after 2 years, I mean, she was like cooked and she wanted to leave and blah, blah, blah.
Was it the weather, the people, the temperament?
It was a little bit of both. Okay. I mean, I remember she would go through McDonald's and they would say, could you repeat that? And then they would have a bet internally where she was from. And they always would bet she's from Texas for some reason. But flowers would push through the ground in, you know, February. And it snowed 7 inches on the seventh day of May. And we didn't have a lot of snow in the 2 years that we were there. It was just cold.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But she came to me after that and she said, yeah, I'm leaving and I'm going to take the kids and I'd like for you to go. And I go, okay, can you give me like, you know, the summer?
Some leave time?
She goes, yeah, I'll give you the summer. So that's how we ended up in Nashville.
Okay.
So we've been in Nashville ever since.
What year was that?
90 or 91, okay. Right in that area.
So you've seen Nashville explode.
Oh, explode.
Yeah.
Well, and I saw it before that because I grew up in Russellville, Kentucky, which was north of here about an hour and a half. Mm. So my dad was a type 1 diabetic, and so he came over, and his doctor's name was Addison Scoville, and he was Thomas Frist's partner.
Oh, wow.
And so this was before HCA started, and I remember my dad came out to the car one day. I came over with him, and he goes, I just had the strangest thing happen. And I go, what? And he goes, well, he goes, Dr. Frist came into the exam room and said, hey, we're getting ready to start a hospital company. You want to put a little bit of money in it? We're asking all of our patients if they want to do that, all of our really good patients. And, of course, Dad didn't have two nickels to rub together, so he didn't.
Oh,
but
man.
I've often thought $10,000 would have, what would that be
worth
for that?
Wow.
Of course, we'd have sold it years ago. But
that's like Steve Jobs coming to you in like 1983 and saying, hey, you know, do you have an investment you want to make?
Yeah. I mean, you know, so, but that was, I was probably, I don't know, 11, 12 at the time.
Yeah.
And I was with, this is anecdotal, but I was at Acme Feed and Seed, you know, down
downtown. Oh, yeah.
And I had all of the kids down there. And we were drinking and having a big time.
As one does on Broadway.
Yeah. And I said, I remember when this was actually a seed company. And they go, bull, Dad, you do not. I go, yes, I do. I remember what it was, a seed company. Yeah.
You're like, why do you think it's called Feed and Seed?
Right. It was called Hardison Seed Company. And I would come over with my father when he would go to the doctor, and we would go to the seed company, and we would go to some electric company, and I mean, just different places.
Yeah. Because my understanding is that, like, there was a time where you didn't really go to Broadway, like, you didn't go to Broadway as a destination. Mm-hmm. Like, that was not.
No, you didn't.
That's, so you've mentioned your wife. How did you guys meet?
High school.
Okay, high school sweethearts.
Cute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we followed each other for a long time. I remember the first time I ever saw her. And we went to college. That was really the draw for me not to play football.
Okay.
I had some offers that, you know, really to walk on. And I was going to go to this one school. And I was like, well, you know, I can go to that school. And it's going to be 100 degrees. And I'll be sweating. And, you know, all the grass clippings that you have to get down in. Or I could go to Kentucky, join a fraternity. She'll get in a sorority, you know.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. So I chose the latter.
It's worked out.
It's worked out well. Yeah. It's worked out real well.
High risk, high reward.
High risk, high reward.
Is there anything that you wanted to talk about that you haven't?
We probably ought to talk a little bit about the bank.
No, this is about you.
Well, so Ella Simmons is a really good friend of mine.
Uh-huh.
And, you know.
Hence how I know your nickname is Bucket.
Yeah. And Zach and Blake, I think, have stumbled on something in the healthcare space. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's not a lot of institutions that are out there that understand these guys are going through training and they come out and they're broke, but they're going to make $1 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so they need some assistance to get them over that hump.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, over that training hump. And because they've literally gone from indentured servants, and that's what they are in their training.
Indentured servants with hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. Student loan debt.
Debt, yeah.
Right. To all of a sudden, I present them with an opportunity, and they're like, hey, this is a great opportunity, but I don't have any cash.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so being able to create a funding mechanism for them mm-hmm. is really good.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Zach is working with, you know, some of the larger players that are out there. Everybody's got the same need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
So I think they're really on to something. And and I'm glad that they've realized it and embraced it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's a hell of a business model.
Yeah, especially in, you know, being in Nashville.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right. So anyway, but it's a good group of people.
Well, thanks for choosing to do your business with us, Kenny.
Yeah.
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 How did you and Ellis meet?
We met at Hillwood Country Club.
Okay.
Probably. Yeah, and I met Jim, and you know, I mean, mm-hmm. all the guys are over there. So.
Yeah, because I think Wilson goes to Hillwood too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Blake does. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's the best golfer?
I'd say Jim.
You don't have to say that.
Yeah.
Did he pay you?
No, I'd say Jim.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he's the best golfer.
Better than you, or are you better than him?
He's better than me.
Oh.
Yeah.
We had a meeting earlier today in which Jim's computer was running the PowerPoint, and his computer lock screen is a picture of him golfing.
Hitting a bunker. Yeah. He's hitting a bunker shot. It's very, very funny.
He's pretty good. He's pretty good.
Damn.
I don't get to play with Blake that much. I play with Ellis a little bit. We call him E-Train.
Yep, so do I.
Mm-hmm.
That's bled over into the bank, too.
Yeah.
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 Do you know how that started? Because I don't, now
I don't
that you mention it.
I don't know how that started.
Yeah, I'm going to have to ask him one
I don't
day.
Know that. And but he's a Kentucky boy, and mm-hmm. He's a basketball guy, you know. So I don't know.
Yeah. Well, this has been Buckets of Fun. And that's a wrap for us. Thank you for watching. Thank you, Kenny, for joining us.
You're welcome.